crunch elections this Sunday for Germany at perhaps the most pivotal moment since the fall of the Berlin Wall. Back then, it was about making a success of reunification. Today, it's a reckoning over the German model that ensued. Under threat, the kind of global free trade that powers Germany's export-driven economy. Instead, it's Trump's tariffs, a Russian aggression that's inching closer in not so far off Ukraine, and an aging population that needs to replenish its workforce but doesn't want more migrants. Seizing on the mood of a nation in recession, the far-right AfD, which polls suggest could finish second behind the Christian Democrats, with the U.S. vice president last Friday passing up a chance to meet the incumbent center-left chancellor, instead seeing Alice Weidel on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference, voters wonder if the usual warnings of foreign election meddling come this time more from the United States or from the usual suspect, Russia. The pressure's on, and in a nation where lead candidates know that they can't bash their rivals too hard, after all, that they know that come next Monday morning, when the ballots are being counted, they might have to call each other up for coalition building. Could this election be different? If so, how would it be different? Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at Germany's crunch elections. Joining us from the Baden-Württemberg city of Schwäbisch Gmünd, CDU Member of Parliament, Ingeborg Gräßler. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure. Good evening.
From Berlin, Green Member of the European Parliament, Sergei Lagodinsky. Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be here.
Roberta Schmidt is managing editor for the Germany branch of the news watchdog site NewsGuard. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And France 24 correspondent Nick Holdsworth is in the German capital. Nick, we'll get the news and the weather from you in a moment. We'll tell you why. You can, by the way, listen, like, and subscribe to the France 24 debate wherever podcasts are streamed. So, Nick, first wintertime election in Germany since 1987. How cold is it?
It's been about minus 10 most mornings. We've had clear nights with a bright half moon and clear days. Very chilly. We had a lot of snow a few days ago. It stopped snowing and it's just frozen since then. That's why I'm inside this. You may hear a little bit of an echo. It's an old-style Berlin apartment with high ceilings. It's one of the buildings that survived the bombing in Schöneberg in the southern part of Berlin during the war.
So a cold outside, a heated home stretch to the campaign, though. We can listen to the front runner, Friedrich Merz, debating the incumbent Olaf Scholz Wednesday evening in prime time.
Wir müssen in den nächsten 4 Jahren.
We have to solve two major problems in this country in the next 4 years. That is migration and the economy. If we don't solve these two problems, then you and we and all democratic parties in the political center will not be in the running for the next change of government in the 2029 federal elections. We will finally slide into right-wing populism. And I am standing here to avoid exactly that.
Now, Nick Holdsworth, is that the way that... Is he correct? Those are the two issues, the economy and immigration?
Those are the big two issues. The war in Ukraine hasn't had much of a look in domestic politics. I was talking to a German friend earlier. She's been unemployed for nearly a year. Her concern is getting back into the labour market. Had several rejections already. She's less worried about the immigration side of things, but that is a big issue for a lot of Germans. Between the far-right AfD and the far-left parties such as the Bunde Sarawagenknecht, they have about 25% of the vote. And really, this idea that there are too many immigrants, even as you've mentioned, aging population, they're going to need fresh workers, that's the big issue. And it's been made even bigger, of course, since last week. Intervention by J.D. Vance when he talked to Alice Weidel, the chancellor candidate from the AfD, rather than talking to his host, Chancellor Oleg Scholz.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that. And it's interesting you mention Scholz because you get the sense that this pressure from these anti-immigrant formations is weighing on the conversation, even if it's a one-on-one format like the one we saw Wednesday night. Here he is talking tough on foreigners who commit crimes.
Müssen Täter hart bestraft werden?
Perpetrators must be severely punished. If they have committed offenses and do not have German citizenship, then they must certainly expect that we will return them to another country, their country of origin, and that we will pull out all the stops to make this possible.
Ingeborg Gräßle, your reaction listening to Olaf Scholz?
It would be great if the government had done this, but they didn't do anything. It's not so easy to bring people outside the country when they have no passports, when their home country doesn't take them back. This is a challenge. This has been a challenge for every government. But this government, especially with the Green Party, they did not want to regulate the migration question. On the contrary. And this is what now makes the far-right party AfD strong. You know, in the 3 years of this government, the AfD electorate doubled. And this is a clear failure of their politics. So we have to deal with that, and we have to deal as well with all those new international questions. Germany is a little bit under shock from what we heard in Munich from J.D. Vance, what we hear every day from President Trump concerning Ukraine. I had today a meeting with Ukrainians. They are very worried, and they are very worried about their situation in the world. That's why we have a lot of things to do, and we are ready to do so.
Sergei Lagondinsky, you heard Ingeborg Gräßle say that it's the Greens' lax views on immigration that are to blame.
Well, this is, of course, not true. The conservatives, as everywhere in Europe, has chosen their favorite target and opened a culture wars. And of course, you have to project it on someone. And in Germany, it is the Greens. And this is counterfactual. In fact, the one reform of the European asylum package, GEAS, it is called, was organized and co-organized also by the foreign minister of Germany, by Annalena Baerbock. It was supported by the Greens in the Bundes government. And for Annalena Baerbock, I know this personally, she's done a lot in order to make this European solution possible. That would mean that we, for example, would have checks at the outer borders of the European Union. I think they think that our conservative friends don't understand and maybe don't like is that we do strictly abide by European solutions. We don't want populist solutions that would have European Union implode. This is not what we need now, especially now when we are facing Trump, Vance and others who would love to see us together with Putin to implode on our national borders. This is not the way to go. We have a very clear plan. Our main candidate, Robert Habeck, has presented a 10 points plan, which is about more law enforcement, more people, more deportations, and a very clear European solution for things. And I think this is the way to go.
Roberta Schmidt, you, as a German in Paris, you've seen how French mainstream parties watching the far right gain ground at every election, playing catch up a bit. When you listen back to that clip of Olaf Scholz, is it the same as what we're seeing here?
It is definitely similar. There are similarities there. And I think with the German elections, what we see this year around is also that there's more interference or different kinds of interferences than with the previous elections. In the previous elections, we were already in Germany aware of Russia influencing the elections and the voter decisions. We see this again, but this time using AI, which has increased since the last time, and also different other individuals who are...
I want to get back to that question of disinformation, but now there's the question as well of what happens next. We've seen a viral TikTok video that has moved the needle among young people. It was put out by Heidi Reicheneck. She is the 36-year-old co-leader of the Party of the Left, Die Linke. She was in Parliament a few weeks back calling out the leader of the CDU, the lead candidate Friedrich Merz, for voting with the AfD on an anti-immigration motion.
All this happened only 2 days after we commemorated the liberation of Auschwitz, 2 days after commemorating the murdered and tormented. Now you're collaborating with those who carry on the same ideology.
Die Linke had been on 3% in the polls not too long ago. But if you look at Politico's poll of polls, they've now climbed to 7% in the ranking. There you see the polls. And you have the CDU and its sister party, the CSU, around 30%. The AfD up to 21%, one in five German voters. The SPD in third place, just ahead of the Greens. And yeah, the Die Linke moving up. And of course, just to remind our viewers, Nick Holdsworth, in Germany, if you're above 5%, that means you get into parliament.
Yes, absolutely. So the chances are that we may see some representation from the left, from Die Linke, in this parliament. Now, they may not have very much influence on any coalition that emerges from this snap election on Sunday, but they will certainly have a voice and be able to bring their view to a wider public. And they're the only party, it's worth saying, they're the only party in Germany that isn't for sending immigrants back.
And they're using TikTok. I want to ask you about this, Roberta Schmidt, since you're talking about the means of communication. TikTok was at the heart of a controversy in Romania's canceled presidential election recently. Her message, though, getting out there on this social media platform, is that a problem or is it okay?
It depends. I think TikTok is a medium that has a large spread and that is currently already used by politicians. The AfD is very successful in how they use this app. I think there's no way around other politicians also using it, but we need to make sure that the information that is spread there is also accurate.
Now, the party of the left on 7%, we're talking about them because, well, Ingeborg Gräßle, they have a view of what the German model should be that's different from the two big mainstream parties from the center-left and the center-right. Is there a rethink of what the German model is?
Yes, of course. We see the international challenges, but, you know, my problem is not Die Linke, because they are completely sidelined in the German political landscape. We need to build a coalition in the middle of the political landscape, which means the socialists, because the Greens in our party, in the CDU, they are not really, we cannot sell it neither to our voters nor to our members, which means that we are more or less depending on the socialists, and they have to be aware that now they have to act in a very responsible way.
There are two scenarios possible on Sunday night. Either a lot of these parties don't get the 5% threshold, in which case you'll run the board at the CDU and you'll be able to perhaps to a large degree dictate terms in a grand coalition, or you'll have to contend with these smaller parties.
I think we will manage to form a government with the socialists. The more parties enter in parliament, of course, the bigger will be the problem to form a government. But we need a stable government. We saw it in the government before. When we have three parties, four parties, this makes governing very difficult. We are aware of that. Now we need a stable government. And this stable government, in my views, can only achieve with one single party, because the union with CDU, we are already two. We have the CSU from Bavaria and we have the CDU, which means that it will be enough difficult. We have already three parties. If we have another one, the green one, this is not really what I'm dreaming of. Germany needs a stable government. Our economy needs rapid decisions in favor of economy and economic points. If not, we will lose a lot of companies to the European Union and to the United States, of course.
Sergei Lagoninsky, what's the most probable outcome that you see on Sunday night?
We'll see how things will go. There are a lot of people who are still undecided. What I hear from our conservative friend, from the Christian Democrats, and from the guest here, this is the most stupid strategy you can imagine. You are making all coalitions impossible, except for one, and then you're telling that you will be able to dictate to the one only option that you have, democratic option that you have, your conditions. This will never happen. You're making Social Democrats stronger in this situation. And let's not forget, Social Democrats are just a couple of points ahead of Greens. This is not a large party, as you called it. It's a small party, so this is not a grand coalition. You've made the left strong, so that the left will get into the parliament, where then a two-party coalition will not even be possible. You will have to deal with a tripartite. This is a crazy, crazy a strategy, which is based on one thing. Anything that is progressive, anything that is forward-looking, anything that is future-looking, for example, talking about climate as policy, is branded now as not touchable by the conservative mainstream. This is crazy, and it really does not account to the realities, the global realities that we're having. And the global realities must be that we join together the two parties who are the closest in foreign policy in confronting Putin, and these are the Conservatives and the Greens, and those parties who want to look forward, to look, talk about innovation. These are the topics that we should be talking about digitalization and innovation. And this is not the combination of the Conservatives and Social Democrats. So how I look at what is going to happen on Sunday, we will have a choice between stagnation, back to the roots with the so-called grand coalition, which is not grand anymore, or a combination that would be innovative, forward-looking, and very clear security-oriented in terms of our confronting both Putin and Trump. This would be the coalition with Greens. So anyone who thinks that we need change and shift and we need stability internationally have to give their vote to the Greens, even if they want and sympathize with the Conservatives.
Ingeborg Grässle, the statement by Donald Trump on Tuesday that Volodymyr Zelensky is an unelected dictator, does that weigh on your mind? And do you take the point that you probably have more in common with Sergei Lagundinsky than meets the eye at first glance?
Thanks for allowing me to react. This is why we have some problems with the Dear Green Party, because they always classify other people. Thanks for the silly. I think we cannot sell a green participation to a government led by the Christian Democrats. We cannot sell it neither to our voters nor to our members. People are so unhappy. You know, today in a rally, I spent several hours with elderly people who are so unhappy about the heating act, the heating law, which forces them to renew their heating in their house. This makes them a costly operation.
Rubbish.
I'm not sure why you choose always those kind of words. I made 15 years in the European Parliament, and I never met colleagues talking like you. It's not really helpful to find an agreement either. We see that.
I work very well with my conservative friends.
We are very well aware that this is the government of the last chance, because in 29, this will be the far right, if we do not manage to solve the problems. We are willing to solve the problems, and of course, if it is sufficient to govern with one party, with the socialists, if the majority is sufficient, I think this is what we will do. Because with the Green Party, this is rather difficult for us to sell it to our voters. I take this point very seriously, because this is what I see now every day. I'm campaigning since 6th of January, and at least 5 times a day, 10 times a day, this is what I am told in my constituency and in other constituencies as well. Our friends from the Christian Socialist Social Union in Bavaria, they tell the same thing. That's why I cannot imagine how it will go against their will. That's why, in my view, we have huge challenges, and of course we will talk to everybody apart from the AfD. But of course we need to solve the problems we need to have a very economic friendly course of in the government. We need to have to do a lot of to redo some of the of the decisions of the former government, and of course we need to do better for the next 4 years. If not, we have now the government of the last chance. We know that. We take it very seriously.
Let me bring in Nick Holdsworth on this. Nick, this wedge over that we're seeing play out here in the discussion over the energy transition, over these issues, is this something that's playing out nationally that you're seeing?
Yes. You know, I'm sorry.
I think that the more cynical Germans might point out that the fact that the previous CDU Chancellor Angela Merkel relied so much upon cheap Russian gas, and that when the war started and they stopped taking Russian gas, that pushed up all the prices. We've been recently talking to business people here in Germany who say it's just impossible. It's not only the prices for everything going up and, you know, they're having to push on those prices to consumers. It's also all the red tape. There's an awful lot of bureaucracy in Germany. It is playing into the election, and I think that people want a clear path forward. It's quite obvious that Germany is waking up to a hangover after all those years of relying upon cheap Russian gas. Now, that's in the past. We can't do anything about that now. Our guests tonight are right that people have to work together, and there is a danger that if it's not sorted out now, in 2029, the far right could reap the benefit. If you look back in history, back to the 1930s, there was this sort of bickering amongst the Social Democrats and other parties before Hitler came to power. So we have to be very careful. And there has to be some kind of coalition that works and delivers for what German voters want.
All right, let's talk about something that's, I guess, still have people in many European capitals with jaws dropped. Germany and Europe still in shock over what happened last Friday in Munich. The U.S. vice president called for an end to the firewall. That's the political firewall by which other parties refuse any kind of federal coalition that includes the far right in Germany. We have a similar one here in France. J.D. Vance even met with Alice Weidel on the sidelines of the summit. She'd been denied a speaking slot by organizers. And this follows last month's appearance by video link of a certain Elon Musk at an AfD rally in the eastern German city of Halle.
I think this election coming up in Germany is incredibly important. I think it could decide the entire fate of Europe, maybe the fate of the world. That is the significance of this election. So that's why it's very important to talk to your friends and family and convince them to consider voting for AfD.
Let's go. Let me try one thing. Die Republikaner machen ihr Land wieder groß.
The Republicans are making their country great again, and we in Germany are making our homeland great again.
Make Germany great again.
I got several questions for you, Roberta Schmidt, but let me begin by asking, an endorsement by J.D. Vance or by Elon Musk, does that move the needle? Does that make Germans want to vote more for the AfD or less?
I don't think it makes them the ones that already thought about voting for it, the AfD would make them vote for the AfD less, because individuals like Elon Musk have a widespread with their voice on X, but also no matter where they speak. People are following Elon Musk for years. They're his fans. They're fans of his products, of, you know, Tesla, etc. And I think hearing that he makes the AfD okay to talk about in that way, and sometimes also shares the same worries that a lot of these voters already have, including spreading misinformation or very opinionated information, that resonates with these people. So I think it will lead more people that are maybe on the fence to feel more comfortable speaking and voting for the AfD.
In the past, we've had French President François Hollande campaign for a social democrat. Is that foreign meddling? And the clip that we just showed, is that foreign meddling?
In Germany right now, the concern of the current government, but also of the opposition and journalism in general, is quite high when it comes to this kind of meddling, if you want to call it that.
Is it meddling?
In a very different way, it's an influence. It's a direct influence by sharing an opinion. It's not the same kind of meddling that we see from Russia, for example. That's disinformation campaigns that are structured, that are working with fake websites, etc. This is still very influential, maybe in some ways even more influential, because it is directly targeting people that are already on the fence, already not very trusting.
Sergei Lagondinsky, is it okay if you're not German to express an opinion about the German elections?
Well, of course it's okay, and nobody's saying that nobody is allowed to have their judgment about things. I think the problem with Musk is a bit different. The problem is his power, his digital power, his technological power, his influence with the president, Trump. And the same is with Mr. Vance. It's one thing to campaign within the European Union among sister parties. It's another thing to intervene here and try to force democratic parties to give up on their strategies on how to contain democratic space. I think this is one of the issues that is different here, rather than, you know, having a sister party president stop by and have an electoral event. So from that perspective, I think there is a difference here, and we are very worried, because this doesn't stop there. I was in Munich during the speech of Mr. Vance, and it is dictating to us how we should regulate our digital space, and accusing us not believing the way Americans believe, you know, trying to convert us. And if we don't convert, then, and this is the decisive point, they will not defend us under Article 5 of NATO. And this is the actual breach.
Yeah, Ingeborg Grässle, when you heard J.D. Vance talk about the biggest problem not being Russia or China, but an enemy within for Europe, what was your reaction?
I thought that he's not really, he doesn't meet the point. He didn't meet the point. In my view, this is part of this crude and confusing message out of United States. This is a nice try to weaken Europe. The goal of the new government, of the U.S. government, is to weaken Europe. A weak Europe means that you need a weak Germany, and a weak Germany you get with a strong AfD. This is the line I see, and this is what we need to prevent by any means.
What's the reason to weaken Europe?
Because they do not want rules. They don't want European Union is regulating a lot of new policy areas. AI, artificial intelligence, they don't want that. Which means that they don't want to have rules for the United States as well, for the products of the United States. Unfortunately, TTIP, the trade and tariffs agreement with the United States, was blocked by the Greens in 2016. This is a pity. One of the numerous huge failures.
The Greens couldn't block it because they were not in the government.
You did everything. You did everything to make NGOs great. With a lot of arguments, a lot of false arguments.
Yeah, but this is not blocking.
We had no chance to put it through by any arguments we put on the table. You know, I did the campaign. That's why I'm knowing what I'm talking about. I'm sorry to say it. I think we need a strong Europe, a Europe which regulates, a Europe with less bureaucracy, but a Europe who shows us how to stick together. They don't want a strong European Union because they need weak member states. Trump wants to deal with every member state being very weak. The European Union is nearly as strong as the United States. And this is His aim is clearly to destroy the European Union. This was at his first term, and this is what he does now with even stronger means in his second term. That's why, in my view, the answer on the Trump government is let's stick together.
So, Sergei Lagandowski, let me ask you this. The German model, you heard Nick Holdsworth describe part of it earlier. Cheap Russian gas. The other parts are being able to export to China. And the third part is U.S. defense to ensure security. Is it all up for grabs now?
Well, we are in a very difficult situation, and this is a structural challenge. And anyone who thinks that this is a fault of one political movement or one party that was here in power for 3 years is just spreading fake news. This is a structural challenge. We did manage to mitigate the worst risks that we had through the very able and active economy minister who made it sure that we had heating during the winters when we did not have gas from Russia. This was a green achievement in this government. We have achieved
but looking forward, Sergei Lagandowski, my question is, looking forward now, how does Germany organize itself to get out of the recession it's in with this world order that's changed so fast?
Yeah, we must, first of all, the red tape that was mentioned, we should start reducing, and we already did during this government, reducing the red tape. We need also to look on the European level also how we can reduce the multiple reporting obligations. Mm-hmm. We are in the process of doing it with our laws, and this commission is doing it. We have to invest more. And this is what the conservatives have hindered and have blocked, that we reform the so-called Schuldenbremse, so the inability of Germany to borrow money on the markets in order to invest in times when we're having recession. So we're doing something that is totally counterintuitive from the economy theory point of view. We have been saving money and have not been able to spend money in times of the recession. We need a huge investment into digitalization, into innovation, into defense. And this CDU, together with liberals, were blocking those attempts all the time and all along. And now they're coming and blaming a party that was in power for 3 years. Right. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Again, looking forward, Ingeborg Gräßle, there's this constitutional rule that limits deficits in Germany. Are you in favor, personally, of a carve-out to increase defense spending?
Of course we need to increase defense spending, and I'm sure we will find the money. If we don't find the money, we have other means to make it in a very targeted way, to allow in a very targeted way to spend
more on
defense.
But is it time to revisit that spending cap?
Not at all, because, you know, Germany, the tax income of Germany of all political levels is 1,100 billion euros. The current debt break allows new debts every year, every budgetary year, of 100 billion euros. How many debts, please, would you like to do? We pay now 40 billion euros.
Where are you going to get the money from?
I'm sorry. We need now to redo some budgetary points. We have a lot of problems in spending. We spend far too much on things we do not really need. That's why we should revisit and we should redo. And this is the work I'm looking forward. I'm a budget controller, and I'm really happy that now is the moment where we cannot go ahead as we did in the past. We are not doing a blame game. We try to. We have the duty, the task solve some important problems of this country.
Disagreement on the debt break and whether or not to loosen it. Roberta Schmidt, again, when you watch what's going on back in your home country from here, your thoughts on this?
I mean, there are comparisons with France and Germany, but those are more political, of political nature. And what I focus on more is the disinformation campaigns, to come back to that. And what I really wanted to add to the point that you made earlier, or that we talked about earlier, when it comes to how people like Musk influence the German elections right now, it's not just about the question, can people from the US or any other country have an opinion on German elections? Of course, they can have an opinion on German elections. What is worrying with Musk, for example, is that we just brought out a report 2 days ago looking at the false claims that Musk has posted and reposted and what a spread they had, including some about Germany.
How much is Twitter, or X as it's now known, used in Germany?
It is used in Germany, especially by certain groups. So Musk has a large following in general, but also a large following in Germany. And when he posts false information about, for example, targeting the EU, saying reposts that the Romanian elections were cancelled by the EU, and that same thing could happen to Germany, of course, that is scary to German voters who already don't have a lot of trust and are thinking about maybe voting for the AfD. And then when they see Musk reposting something like that, and then J.D. Vance also saying similar things in Munich, then that has an effect on German voters, as it has on anyone else who follows him.
Nick Holdsworth, earlier in the conversation, you were referencing 1933 and the year that Adolf Hitler came to power. Isn't that a bit of a stretch, though, talking about that period? Is it that dire? Is that what Germans are referring to right now?
I mean, certainly not from the mainstream point of view, but there are posters dotted around Berlin, say in the English translation, voting for the far right is so 1933. I think people are genuinely concerned about this shift to the right. And for the last 80 years, Germany has been very, very positively determined to put that period of history behind them. There are all kinds of legal curbs on the far right, which is why parties won't work with the far right, with the AfD. And at the same time, we're hearing in AfD meetings now, supporters for Alice Weidel, their candidate for chancellor, chanting Alice for Deutschland. Now, that's very close to another phrase used during the Third Reich period, which is a banned phrase. People are very unsettled about the whole thing. The far right have never been this strong before in Germany since the war.
Nick, you're also our former Moscow correspondent. I want to ask you, and you're speaking with on the panel here, there's the Russian-born Sergei Lagandowski is with us as well. So let me ask you this, Nick. You know, we've been processing what happened in Munich last Friday, but what's happened in the last 24 hours out of the United States with Donald Trump picking up what many see as a talking point of the Kremlin when it comes to Ukraine, does that spook people in Germany?
I think most people in Germany are a little bit far from those kind of politics. Not everybody here has very wide experience of Russia or interest in Russia. Of course, they're worried about the threat from Russia. The idea that Ukraine started the war is certainly something which most Germans would look askance at, though.
Sergei Lagandowski. Your thoughts on this?
If you're addressing the same question to me. I know many, unfortunately, and many a lot of people in Germany who do share Trump's views. This is an increasing potential, and this is also a geographical issue. I know a lot of them in Eastern Germany, where I also rally and work. I work in Berlin and in Brandenburg, and I know a lot of people who share this. Look, X has only a share of 6 to 8% of our market, but there are plenty of other things like TikTok and others. And what we're seeing now is normalization of the right, extreme right, This is the biggest worry, and this is what Musk is doing, Vance is doing, and this is what CDU unfortunately did during when they relied on their votes and breaking this taboo for anti-immigration legislation that was totally unnecessary. This is something that is not acceptable, and we should join forces rather than let others polarize us. And I can only insist again, the responsibility that we're having, and this is what we see when we look at Washington and at Kremlin approaching each other. The responsibility that we see is to have a strong Europe and strong democracy and to work across the aisle between Democrats. And this is something that is going to be the biggest and the most promising challenge starting this Sunday.
Ingeborg Grässle, the joke in Germany goes that the election is on Sunday, but the campaign begins on the Monday, because that's when you try to build a coalition. With all the turmoil we've described, how fast will it have to be to forming a coalition this time? And it can be more than a month or 2 months sometimes.
I just wanted to say before I answer your question that we did not normalize AfD, but it was a good action of our Chancellor's candidate Merz to put that law in the Bundestag in a situation where nobody has a majority. There's a minority government, and we wanted to show the voters what we would do on migration questions. And it was clear that the Greens would want to cut down migration, but we want to do it. And it was a turning point for our campaign.
You decided to do it with
AfD. For our campaign, it was very important. And I would like to say that, of course, I think that the parties in the middle, they understand and understood that...
Very briefly, because we're almost out of time. Ingeborg Grässle, how much time will it take to form a government this time?
Future democracy depends on them. And I think this is understood by everybody. That's why I'm optimistic that we will manage to form a government very quickly, and a stable government as well.
Ingeborg Grässle, I want to thank you so much for joining us from Bad Wittenberg. I want to thank Sergei Lagonditsky and our correspondent Nick Holdsworth in Berlin. Roberta Schmidt, thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.